to people that are new to the space or just feel overwhelmed by all the information, all I can say is that just take your time and just every day learn a little bit more and a little bit, become more interested in the things that interest you, and don't like worry about the things that maybe don't interest you as much. And in no time at all, you'll probably be an expert as well, simply because most of the world doesn't even know this exists yet.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Following along on our lineage of blockchain-based conversations and interviews on this show, previous guests like Joe Lubin, the founder of Ethereum, Roger Ver, quote-unquote Bitcoin Jesus, Eric Voorhees, Brendan Eich, and many, many more, located at goingdeepwithaaron.com/blockchain. We are adding today our first interview with a lady operating in the blockchain space. Women are underrepresented, unfortunately, in this land, but our next two episodes are going to be with some very exciting innovators who are trying to shape the future of this technology and of this space. My conversation today with Taylor Monahan, the founder of My Ether Wallet, is both around how she got interested in blockchain technology, how My Ether Wallet works, and also some really timely advice both around security and educating yourself on the space. If you took the challenges in episode 158 and 159, you would have bought an Ether below the price of $20 and Bitcoin below the price of $1,000. That challenge has been issued multiple times since then and will continue to be issued by guests of this show who are believers in this technology as the future of commerce and payments. But I hope that more so than making some sort of financial or monetary gain, you really start to internalize the lessons and the implications of this technology. Taylor gets into it, as does our next guest, Kalani Cook. It's very exciting. And if you love these types of big ideas and are located in the city of Pittsburgh, you need to make sure you get your tickets for the Going Deep Summit January 27th at the Kelly Strayhorn Theater. Not necessarily centered around blockchain, but other big ideas that will be transforming your career and your community. I hope that you'll head over to goingdeepwithaaron.com/event to get those tickets, and I hope that you'll pay close attention to today's interview with Taylor Monahan.
You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
So Taylor, thank you so much for coming on my podcast. I'm excited to be speaking with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to be here, Aaron.
So we have had a number of people in previous episodes, we'll link to in the show notes for this episode, who've been working in the blockchain cryptocurrency space, each with their own spin on where they think things are going or just the project that they happen to be working on. So in union or continuing that trend, having you on to talk about My Ether Wallet, I think it just makes sense to start off with maybe at a real 101 level for some of the beginners. What is a cryptocurrency wallet and what was appealing or what attracted you to building one for yourself?
That's an excellent question. So essentially, in the quote unquote real world, you know, or the more traditional world that most of us are familiar with, you have like a bank account and your bank account holds your assets, whether that's your US dollar or your euro or your British pound or whatever. And so you have a relationship with a bank. They hold your money. You can access that money and spend it via things like your debit card or writing someone a check or, you know, maybe a third party service like Venmo. And this allows you to buy things. And it allows you to pay people for things. And you can go to your online banking and you can see your balance, maybe see what your balance is on your credit card, all of those different things. And in the cryptocurrency world, we're actually, you know, removing this centralized layer of banks, and we're removing the centralized layer of Visa and MasterCard. And so when you have your cryptocurrency assets, whether that's Bitcoin or Ether or, you know, any number of the tokens on the Ethereum blockchain, the user still needs that same sort of interface just like you have your online banking, where they can go and they can see their balance. They can send money to pay for things or to pay back their friend for that plane ticket that they bought them, or to split lunch or whatever it is. And so what my EtherWallet allows you to do is, you know, view your Ethereum balances and your Ethereum token balances, send money, and then do all these other unique things that are pretty exclusive to the Ethereum blockchain, which is interacting with smart contracts or bidding on an ENS name. And so, you know, that's sort of where we're at. And why we built this is because a lot of the sort of trusted names in cryptocurrency of where you do this currently, for example, Coinbase, it still isn't 100% decentralized, because Coinbase is very similar to a bank in the sense that you have an account with Coinbase and they help you manage your money and you can send and receive. But at the end of the day, like, you're still reliant on Coinbase, right? What my EtherWallet does is we empower you, the user, to interact directly with the blockchain. And if we, my EtherWallet, didn't exist as a company, it wouldn't change anything. So we don't hold your money. We don't hold your private keys. We don't prevent you from sending somewhere. We can't recover your password, anything like that. My EtherWallet is really like a tool or an interface that allows you to take these actions. And we built it because there wasn't anything like that for Ethereum, and we needed to build it, right? And we've shared it with the world, and the world has been pretty, they love us. Like, I can't really put it any other way. Like, we have an amazing user base of really, really loyal, amazing people who love cryptocurrency and want to see it evolve. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. And that's why we built it. And that's why we're still building it today.
It's an exciting time when you can be a part of building something so fundamentally useful for an ecosystem or for a world. And I think that is part of what has really brought in so much energy and excitement, because you have that sense of really building something from the ground up. You're talking about Ethereum here. We've had Joe Lubin and some other folks who are building on the Ethereum platform. And the big, maybe unique component of Ether as opposed to some of the other cryptocurrencies is that it also is used to support these other tokens and contribute to this ICO craze or boom or whatever word you want to use there. You're also supporting ICOs and other tokens that are built on top of Ethereum. That's correct?
Yes, that's correct. And it's a bit ironic because I'm not a huge fan of the ICO craze, like the absolute peak madness of it all. However, my EtherWallet as a platform, like, enabled people to do this. Like, we didn't intend to do that, but we definitely played a part in it. And so it's been a bit of a vicious cycle for me personally, right? Like, that cycle in your head where you're like, I don't like this, but I do, but I don't, but I do, but it's the future. But, you know, there's so much money. Is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing in the long run? And so that's been a really interesting thing for me personally to sort of think about in balance, like, my personal beliefs and what our users want in my head.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And one thing we've tried to explore on this show, not just within cryptocurrency, but across industries, whether it's finding a coach, finding a company to join, finding a cryptocurrency to invest in, is separating the hype from what is really deeply valuable. And so I'm curious, not that you have to necessarily call out a specific token or anything, but as someone who's on the ground, who's developing, who's working intimately with these technologies, what do you look for, or how do you personally separate those really practically applicable protocols and tokens from those which are mostly hype?
That's a really, really great question. So what I'm not an investor, right? Like, I have investments, but I don't really look at myself as an investor or a trader. And I never invested in Ethereum to make money, even though it's resulted in that. And I couldn't be happier about that. So when I look at projects, sort of the philosophy that I've always taken, including when I initially invested in Ethereum, was, do I want this to exist? And do I think that the team behind the token can make it exist? And do I think that both the team and what they're trying to accomplish and the existence of that, it will that make like sort of the world a better place or an easier place or whatever it is? And so, you know, some things that I look for are, you know, is the team a dedicated team, not to the success of like their individual project or these little goals that this project has, but does the team have goals that are bigger than themselves? Do they have goals like, I want to change how the world works, or I want to change how Ethereum works, or I want to make sort of these more intangible things? Do they have those higher level goals? And then two, I look for teams that sort of have this like head down work mentality. So I actually am really turned on by projects that don't have a huge marketing presence or a huge social media presence. I look for teams that are obviously like building. I'll look at their GitHubs and I'll see, okay, what sorts of things are they building? And one of the most like perfect examples of this lately has been the Swarm City team. They have gone through like a tremendous amount of drama initially because their initial token sale was with Arcade City, who had a founder who was like just a pretty despicable guy, I think. And so they've separated from that. Then during the Parity multi-sig attack situation over the summer, they were one of the teams that had all their funds stolen. And so, you know, for most people, like this sort of like, you know, just being hit one after the other of these situations would probably destroy most teams, right? Especially the teams that we're seeing raise $10, $20, $30 million today. And instead, I'm talking to them at DevCon last week, and they've built a thing that they're calling a gas station, which enables anyone who doesn't have Ether in their account to send tokens. It enables us to set up this little API interface so that our users can do it and we can actually monetize on that. And then they've also been working on a really cool little tool that handles the loading of these token balances better. And so these are both things that really aren't for their specific project and they're not in this silo. There are these things that are going to improve the developer experience and the user experience on Ethereum. And to have that come from a team who has just been like, you know, had the worst luck in the world, to have them still, you know, heads down working to improve this, those are the types of people that I want to invest in. And those are the types of projects that I do invest in. And, you know, it really has like nothing to do with the hype of it all. It's like the less hype, the better, in my opinion, right?
I love that. And I think that there's also a really important lesson in there about when people think about investing in technology, they're often focused on, well, is that tech better than that tech? And the remembering that there's people behind everything that's being built and them being a conduit for the quality of what the future may hold is a really important insight for people, even if they're not necessarily, like you said, considering themselves crypto investors or investors in general. Understanding that relationship between the technology that you're experiencing, you know, why does Google seem to have the top tech in everywhere they work? They are fantastic at recruiting talent. They have a really deep well in which to pay those people. And regardless of what you may think about their business ethics or anything like that, the amount of intelligence and tech talent that is there is why I think a lot of people are bullish on their future. As we turn it back on you, Taylor, I wanted to maybe change or get back to the business of my Ether wallet. I think that's another thing that some people struggle with coming at this from the outside. You're running this. Can you talk a little bit about how the business of operating my Ether wallet works and how you maybe get compensated or what the future business model looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So my Ether wallet is a really interesting, like has a really interesting position in both cryptocurrency and like the real world, because we started as really traditional, like free open source software, which is this sort of like community and methodology that you're building things that are free and they're open source and they exist. And most of the time when you see these sorts of tools or tooling, you know, they're not money makers. You don't really have like a business model behind them. Oftentimes they're libraries or things that you then use to build other things. And so from there, just because, you know, because the feedback from the community and the support from the community has been so great, we started with just like running off of donations. So the same sort of little link that you'll see on a lot of sites that says like, buy me a coffee or, you know, spot me a beer if you like what I'm building. That same exact mentality was on my Ether wallet. Except it was like, you know, if you want to keep seeing features be built, like, you know, send us some ETH. So from there, you know, we obviously had bigger ambitions, you know, once we saw the feedback from the community and everything was so positive. We now have what I call a stage one monetization, which is we have these rev share agreements with different partners of ours. So we partner with Coinbase to allow people to buy Ether on our site with USD. And then we also have the swap tab, which allows the user to change between Bitcoin and Ether and vice versa. And that's provided by our partnership with a Switzerland-based company, Bitty. And then we also have like various affiliate links. So we have affiliate links for the Ledger hardware wallet, the Trezor hardware wallet, and then Ether cards, which are these little sort of gift card-esque things that have a private key and an address on them and can fit in your wallet and stuff like that. So, you know, that's sort of stage one monetization. And we do pretty well with these little like micro fees or affiliate fees that come in from these. Stage two is like, we don't know exactly what it's going to end up being, but there's some really interesting possibilities that we can do with smart contracts that can provide a service to a user that's like almost like a premium service, right? So there's a whole bunch of these types of things. We can make the bidding on ENS names easier or faster. We can provide delayed transactions, so you can decide when you want your transaction to be sent. We can do things like enabling an aftermarket for buying and selling ENS names, you know, these sorts of things, right? And they're all decentralized and they're all, you know, enabled via smart contracts on the Ethereum blockchain. And you can code into those an address that the user can donate like a small micro fee to either like the creators of the contract or the people that have it on their website or whatever. And so I'm really, really excited to sort of see how these smart contracts and like a very, very small fee style monetization works, not just for my Ether wallet, but for, you know, pretty much everyone that's in this cryptocurrency space. Because as it stands right now, finding a way to balance both open source and, you know, actually running a business that has employees, that has, you know, profits and losses and obligations and those sorts of things is going to be, you know, it's going to be one of the most important things, I think, in actually scaling and actually making this a viable system like that works in the real world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's another great learning or teaching opportunity here. You talked about the ENS domains. I actually just had someone grab goingdeep.eth for me. Mm-hmm. But if you could maybe just explain at a 101 level for folks what that's all about and why that's going to be increasingly relevant in the future.
Absolutely. So the ENS names essentially allow you to point a human readable name, similar to like an email address or a domain name, to like an Ethereum address. And right now, most of these people use this for pointing it to their personal address so that instead of me saying, hey, you can donate to my Ether wallet by sending to 0x7cb56, blah, 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 I can say, hey, you can donate to my Ether wallet by donating to Mewtopia, Mewtopia dot ETH, right? And so that's super cool because long random strings of characters is not human friendly. But in the next stage of things that we're going to start seeing probably like early 2018 is you can actually have your dApps, which are decentralized applications, you can have these also have a name like this. So if you're in, say, Mist or MetaMask, you can actually, instead of going to, maybe it's 0x Project, instead of going to 0xproject.com, you can go to whatever their ENS name is. So that would be like, I don't know what theirs is, but it could be like 0xproject.eth, or it could be Mewtopia.eth if we set one up. And so it basically just allows everyone to have a much easier, more human readable time to either go to some place that they want to go to or send ETH to some place that they want to go to.
Excellent explanation. And I think that that's another one where, you know, some people who may feel like they are just drowning information and this whole new kind of paradigm for the way digital economies can work, it can feel like they're drinking from a fire hose. But even just starting to familiarize with yourself with this puts you, what do you want to say, Taylor, like the top 1%, the top 5% of people who even understand and look into this stuff, like that's not the superficial level that they're getting at Bloomberg or someplace like that.
Right, exactly. And, you know, this space is incredibly new. Like we, you know, we've been hiring like crazy lately. And the most overwhelming pattern that I've noticed when hiring is that most people lack confidence. And they lack confidence because when they try to send us a resume, they realize that their resume literally has no skills that apply to cryptocurrency, right? Like they never had a job in this space. They don't feel like they understand this space. They've never gone to college for cryptocurrency, et cetera, et cetera. And when I have a conversation with them and they say, well, I've been interested in Ethereum since early 2016. I read all I can. I probably spend 3 hours a day on Reddit learning about Ethereum. You know, to me, I'm like, man, you're an expert. Like that, you're literally an expert. And so, you know, to people that are new to the space or just feel overwhelmed by all the information, all I can say is that just take your time and just every day learn a little bit more and a little bit, become more interested in the things that interest you and don't like worry about the things that maybe don't interest you as much. And in no time at all, you'll probably be an expert as well, simply because most of the world doesn't even know this exists yet.
Absolutely. I think that's really good practical advice for people. And as we kind of aim towards wrapping up, Taylor, I want to try to hit them with one more valuable takeaway, and that is around securing their crypto. So you talked about the hardware wallets, and you're building a software wallet here with MyEther. What are, just from some general 101 best practices standpoint, things people can do if they have bought their first crypto or maybe been holding it for a little while? Maybe they're holding it in Coinbase. Maybe they're holding it in a wallet like yours. What practical steps can people take to feel secure that they're not going to get it hacked and lose it all? And what other things should they just be mindful of?
Yeah, absolutely. So the most important thing to remember about cryptocurrency is that when you get your private key, whether that's like in the form of a string of characters or a file, or they're called mnemonic phrases. There are these little like 12 word phrases. That single piece of information is really all an attacker or a hacker needs to compromise your account and steal all your money. And that's absolutely terrifying, right? So in order to protect that, the easiest way, in my opinion, is to get a hardware wallet. So Ledger, Nano S, or Trezor are both compatible with Ethereum and all the tokens. You can use them with MyEther wallet. It's really, really easy. If you know you're not really game to dive in that deeply, honestly, writing it down on a piece of paper, removing it from your computer, and just having this thing on a piece of paper can keep you safe from so many attacks. So many of the attacks that we're seeing today are compromising people's email accounts and they've emailed their private key, compromising their Dropbox accounts and their private key is saved there. You know, we live in this really, really connected world. And it turns out that with cryptocurrency and these really valuable pieces of information, it's best to not be connected. So MyEther wallet allows you to do this easy thing where you can print out your paper wallet. It's literally, it prints out this string of characters. And it also gives you a QR code thing so you can scan it, super easy. You know, and then in terms of best practices for just in general, you know, turning on two-factor, right? Making sure that you don't reuse passwords, being mindful of the websites you visit and what personal data you put into those websites. So this doesn't apply to just cryptocurrency. This is for PayPal, this is for your bank, this is for Gmail. When you arrive at a website and ask for your password or ask for your private key or ask for your address or ask for your name, who are you sending that information to? Are you actually sending it to the person that you think you are, right? If you're on paypal.com or like paypal.io, you can send that to someone that's not PayPal, And same thing with my Ether wallet. We have a ton of these fake websites out there that are like one letter different. It'll be myetherwallets.io. It'll be, you know, these little funny characters. And so, you know, who do you send your personal information to? And whether that's like your private key, whether that's your personal data, like your address or your phone number or whatever, you know, those are both really, really valuable things that you should be mindful of where you put them on the internet and who has access to them, because your personal data is going to end up being insanely valuable as time goes on.
Those are some really great actionable takeaways, going to be super helpful for the audience. And this whole interview has been fantastic. Before we aim towards wrapping up and asking our last two questions, is there anything else that you were hoping to say today that I didn't give you a chance to?
I don't think so. This has been really, really fantastic. I think, you know, I could probably talk about this all day, but I think that this is a really good, you know, we kind of like went over the basics and we dove a little bit deeper, and I'm hoping that people can get a little bit more curious, but I don't think there's anything that I really wanted to call out.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you communicating so clearly and making it understandable for everyone. If people want to learn more about you, the work that you're doing, and just connect in the digital world, where are the best places to do that?
So the best place to like get a hold of me personally these days is actually Twitter. It's the at my Ether wallet Twitter account. I still run it. It's like the one piece of my Ether wallet that's still 100% mine. You can DM me there, follow us there, tweet at us, retweet us, whatever. I personally really love Twitter these days just because the app is so fast and I don't have time to do like long emails. And so being limited to a certain amount of characters is fantastic. So you'll almost always get a response from me pretty quickly on Twitter. And other places, you can go to my Ether wallet. We have a ton of links in the footer. We have like a Slack and we have a Facebook. We have all of those. And then if you like want more help with my Ether wallet, if you go to my Ether wallet and click the help button, we have a really extensive knowledge base that has articles containing like how-tos and also like video tutorials and also like just random articles that will help you dive deeper into this. Like we have a whole section called Diving Deeper that'll just link you to really awesome things that people have written over, I don't know, the last 2 years.
Awesome. We'll be sure to link all that in the show notes for this episode. You can find it at goingdeepwitharon.com/podcast for this and every episode of the show. But as we do, actually, before I ask the very last question, Taylor, given your love for Twitter, how do you feel about them moving up from 140 characters to 280?
It's all right. I personally try to keep mine shorter, like keep them closer to 140. But in the times that I actually need to say more, it's really nice to have, especially if I'm trying to help someone or provide support via Twitter. And the probably biggest disappointment for me is when people just like have this like an OCD type quality where they need to fill up every single tweet. And these are the people that always tweeted exactly 140 characters before. Now they're always tweeting like 280 characters. Those like it's so pointless. Like I really liked how it forced you to be really, really, really concise. And I'm not concise at all, so I really love that. So to watch people on my feed just kind of go crazy with it has been a little bit disconcerting, but hopefully people will sort of tone it down a little bit. I'm not sure.
I'm hopeful. I'm not sure if I'd bet on it, though. Brevity is definitely the soul of wit, and I think that it's a great challenge for everyone to try and limit themselves and spur some more creativity that way. But as we do at the end of each episode, Taylor, I want to give you the mic one final time to issue an actionable personal challenge for the audience.
So I'm going to try to apply this challenge to people that are both like in the cryptocurrency Ethereum space and then also those who aren't. And so I'm going to kind of keep it at be aware of the people around you when they share information or they ask for help or they indicate that they may need support. Be aware of you know, what they're truly looking for, and be aware of like sort of your personal judgments and how your personal experience may affect your response to them. So I'm going to give you an example because I'm not sure that's clear enough, but a lot of times with my Ether wallet, we get support emails or we see things on Reddit or on Twitter, and it's really easy to be dismissive of someone who's asking for help, even if they're not even if they're not saying, I need help, you know, they are reaching out to us because they're looking for guidance or they're looking for help. And sometimes these people are rude. Sometimes they're confused. Sometimes they can come off as being ignorant or stupid or mean or whatever. And so what we've been actively trying to do is be mindful that they're asking for help and then trying our best to help them, whether that's giving them the answer or giving them tools to enable them to find the answer or pointing them to maybe the other service that can answer their question or whatever. And so for listeners today, you know, this sort of approach to people who are looking for help applies everywhere. If you see someone who looks lost, if you see someone that is being mean on social media or is yelling about how something happened to them, you know, maybe take a moment and say, hey, maybe that person just doesn't understand how this works or why this is happening. I wonder if instead of starting a little battle with them, I can provide some assistance or guidance or point them in the right direction.
I love that challenge. I think the expression goes, never attribute to malice that which can adequately be explained by stupidity. Maybe not stupidity is the right word, but ignorance can manifest itself in occasionally being rude. So I think that self-awareness and mindfulness is a great challenge for people, and I hope that they'll take it. Taylor, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing so much wisdom with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a really great experience, and I think that your questions are really, really outstanding. And I'm definitely looking forward to listening to more of your podcasts.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. And I hope that people will check out my EtherWallet and educate themselves a little bit further on this technological revolution that we're all living through. We just went deep with Taylor Monahan. Hope everyone out there has a fantastic day. Hey, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Please hit that subscribe button so that you do not miss any future episodes of the show. We put out 2 per week, including a great one on Wednesday with Kalani Cook. And down the pipe, we have some really fun interviews, including one with Raji Sankar, the food entrepreneur, one of the first franchisees of the Five Guys network of restaurants, who has now started her own fast casual Indian restaurant modeled after Chipotle. I got an inside peek at the location here in Pittsburgh, and it looks absolutely delicious. And I think that you're going to learn a lot from her, not only about business and the restaurant industry, but validating a concept to the market and iterating on design. She is thoughtful, like many guests of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. Make sure you're subscribed.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.